Text 33. Jarayati Ashur Ya Kosham Nigirnam Analo Yata Jarayat Yashu Ya Kosham Nigirnam Analoyata Jariat Yashu Yakosham Nigirnam Analoyata Jariat Yashu Yakosham Nigirnam Analoyata Gayati dissolves. Ashur quickly. Ya which? Kosham the subtle body. Nigirnam things eaten. Anala fire. Yata as. Translation. Bhakti, devotional service, dissolves the subtle body of the living entity without separate endeavor. Just as fire in the stomach digests all that we eat. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Bhakti is in a far higher position than mukti, because a person's endeavor to get liberation from the material engagement is automatically served in devotional service. The example is given here that the fire in the stomach can digest whatever we eat. If the digestive power is sufficient, then whatever we can eat will be digested by the fire in the stomach. Similarly, a devotee does not have to try separately to attain liberation. That very service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the process of his liberation. Because to engage oneself in the service of the Lord is to liberate oneself from material entanglement. Srila Bilvamangal Thakur explained this position very nicely. He said, if I have unflinching devotion unto the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, then mukti or liberation serves me as my maidservant. Mukti, the maidservant, is always ready to do whatever I ask. For a devotee, liberation is no problem at all. Liberation takes place without separate endeavor. Bhakti, therefore, is far better than mukti, or the impersonalist position. The impersonalists undergo severe penances and austerities to attain mukti. But the bhakta, simply by engaging himself in the bhakti process, especially in chanting Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, immediately develops control over the tongue by engaging it in chanting and accepting the remnants of foodstuff offered to the Personality of Godhead. As soon as the tongue is controlled, naturally, all other senses are controlled automatically. Sense control is the perfection of the yoga principle, and one's liberation begins immediately as soon as he engages himself in the service of the Lord. It is confirmed by Kapila Dev that bhakti, or devotional service, is gariyasi, more glorious than siddhi, liberation. Translation. Bhakti, devotional service, dissolves the subtle body of the living entity without separate effort, just as fire in the stomach digests all that we eat. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Stapitam Yena Mutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swayapatantikam Vanchakalpataruvyascha kripasindhuvyevacha paditanam bhavanevyo vaishnavevyo namo namaha. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Jananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasti Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So Lord Kapila is continuing on glorifying the process of devotional service, bhakti, as being the superior, supreme process, spiritual process. Very, very nicely. Here he's giving an important and very interesting example that many people are trying to achieve liberation. They're trying to become free from the difficulties of this material world. And one of the main difficulties that they face is difficulties coming from the mind. Difficulties coming from the mind that there are so many anxieties living in this material world, struggling, competing with others in so many ways, on the work front, on the family front, the social front, on the level of community, so many ways. There are so many difficulties, anxieties. I was in New York last year, about almost a year ago, and we were having a similar discussion about the anxieties of material existence, and one of the devotees attending the program said she was in the field of psychology, and she was saying that the psychologists are now analyzing the phenomenon, psychological phenomenon, which we call stress. One devotee was telling me yesterday she was suffering from stress. And I was going to ask, which type? Because in that discussion in New York, that one psychologist devotee was saying that the psychologists, they're analyzing stress, and they found so many different types of stress. And they feel they can distinguish these different types of stress from each other in terms of their origin and their symptoms, the effects they have, and the longer-term results, like this. So, it's no longer just a matter of stress, but material life is bad in so many ways. And so there may be so many types of stress. So these anxieties, the anxieties of material existence, these are one of the important problems in material life that people who are engaging in spiritual life, that they often would like to become free from, become liberated from anxiety and get peace of mind. So in this very nice example that Lord Kapila is giving, he explains that just as when you eat food and the food goes down through the digestive system and then the digestive system through the element of fire transforms that food into energy and so on, and then it's gradually utilized by the body, and that food is dissolved, actually. That food will never be seen again because of the digestive system. So similarly, the anxieties of the conditioned soul, they're existing within the mind or within the subtle body. And the idea that is being presented here is that simply by engaging in devotional service, simply by engaging in devotional service, then what to speak of the anxieties being addressed, the different types of stress and different psychological problems being addressed and corrected, but actually the entire subtle body dissolves. The entire subtle body, not just some parts of it, those parts which may be connected with anxieties, but the entire subtle body is dissolved. And that means, of course, that all one's propensities for not only distress, but all one's propensities for material consciousness in all respects, they become removed. All of them. Not just the anxieties, but also the hankerings, the various desires, the tendency to calculate in material terms and to envy people, to be proud or arrogant, to become confused, all these different types of psychological phenomena, they dissolve, they disappear from the life of the devotee. And we find in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, in the second chapter, there the symptoms of the different levels of devotees are described quite elaborately. Kanishta Adhikari, Madhyam Adhikari, and Uttama Adhikari. Their symptoms are described at some length, and particularly the symptoms of the Uttama Adhikari, they're described at great length over a number of verses with generally fairly lengthy purports. And in one of those verses, the point is made that the Uttama Adhikari, very advanced devotee, has become so purified of material conditioning that material desire can no longer take place. Material desire can no longer take place within his or her heart. Why? Because material desire involves, generally at least we understand, involves the activities of the subtle body. And within the subtle body are the different elements of that make up one's material consciousness and material desires and attitudes. So when the subtle body is gone, then such types of things cannot happen. So this description is given in the 11th canto. The complete answer to any type of mental problem, whatever it may be. You may be prone to inferiority complex. You may be prone to superiority complex. You may get into too much anxiety too easily. You may not get into enough anxiety. And you may do foolish things and expose yourself to danger because you're not on guard. You may be too materially desirous. Whatever it may be, you may be proud, you may be envious, you may be too attached to any type of material thing. So whatever it is, whatever your problem may be, psychological problem, then what is the answer to that? The answer is become a pure devotee. That is the real answer. That is the real answer. Srila Prabhupada was not very appreciative of the psychologists and psychiatrists who try either through drugs or just like some double talk, really, to talk people or somehow or other get people out of their problems. He didn't appreciate that. The drugs simply place a person in a semi-comatose state, so the mind slows down and they're less disturbed by the mind. The sweet talk about how to just adjust your thinking so that you don't suffer from anxiety so much, that will only last so long. The effect of it will only last so long. These are all simply stopgap and incomplete measures for dealing with all these problems of thinking. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada, there's one letter, either letter or conversation actually, Srila Prabhupada is being asked by one devotee who has some problems of that sort. The devotee is asking, can I go and see a psychologist or psychiatrist? Srila Prabhupada's answer, very much to the point, was that psychologists are humbug. All humbug. That is what Srila Prabhupada said. Yes. They're all humbug. All stopgap measures, incomplete measures, or in some cases, measures, corrective measures, which in the end make things worse. So, why bother? Better to apply yourself very seriously to the process of devotional service and dissolve your subtle body altogether, and then whatever it is, the whole range of mental problems will be gone forever, and you'll be situated on the platform of Satchit Ananda, eternal life full of bliss and knowledge, on the transcendental platform. So this happens when we take to the process of devotional service. Even I the first experience I had of this was when I joined the temple in London some years ago. I had certain anxieties which were really quite troubling actually. And after about a week I was engaging in devotional service, after a few days, then suddenly this idea occurred to me. Actually, it was based on the concept that we're not this body. And then I realized that all those anxieties that I had, which were all to do with the fact that I thought that I was this body, that they were totally insubstantial. And they just completely fell away on the spot. It was a very amazing experience. Krishna consciousness dissolves the subtle body. Gradually, of course, as you make progress through the process of sadhana bhakti. So as you gradually make progress, then progressively the subtle body is dissolved. So one will notice as one goes along in devotional service that the general form of one's thinking changes. It should change. If it doesn't change, then we should understand that we have a problem. We're committing offenses. Material consciousness is lingering on. But if one applies oneself properly to the process, then the subtle body is dissolved, and all the different aspects of one's material consciousness, they go forever. Simply by the process of devotional service. So we understand the point is being stressed here that we don't have to make any separate endeavor. We don't have to make any separate endeavor to deal with ourselves, to improve ourselves in devotional service. We don't have to do anything other than very seriously apply ourselves to the process of devotional service as such. Srila Rupa Goswami in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he talks about different types of devotional service which are mixed with different outside, external things, and as a result one's devotional service becomes compromised. For example, there's karma mishra bhakti. Mishra, of course, means mixed. So karma mishra bhakti means devotional service which is mixed with material desire. So, classic example of this is Dhruva Maharaj. His story is given in the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, that he had very strong material desires. He actually wanted a kingdom bigger than the kingdom of his grandfather. And his grandfather happened to be Lord Brahma. And Lord Brahma's kingdom is the entire universe. So he was very ambitious. Dhruva Maharaj. Very ambitious. Because he wanted to teach his father a lesson that he was not just some insignificant little boy. He wanted to show him that actually he was very important. So with this strong desire, he went trying to find, how can I achieve this? And his mother told him that you should worship God. If you worship God, he may give it to you because he can give anything. So he was wandering, looking for God, but not in any very clear or specific way. So as he was wandering, he met Narada Muni. And Narada Muni was very astute. He understood the condition of this boy. So initially he tried to preach to him more directly, that give up this material desire, don't worry about it, it's not important, just become God conscious. But then he saw that Dhruva Maharaj, he was not able to do that. So therefore Narada Muni engaged Dhruva Maharaj in the process of devotional service, but he tricked him actually. He told them that you do these various things and you'll get your kingdom, just see. You'll please God and he will be happy to give you whatever you want. So those different things that Narada Muni told Dhruva Maharaj to do, actually they were devotional service. But in a clever way, he was encouraging him to do those things by saying that this is how you'll achieve your material desires. So this is Karma Mishra Bhakti. So then Dhruva Maharaj, he engaged in that Karma Mishra Bhakti. But because of the potency of the bhakti, his heart became purified. In due course of time, he saw Krishna. He met the Lord face to face. And when he met the Lord, then he was finally convinced. The Lord was so wonderful. So he was convinced that I don't need this kingdom any longer. And the Lord was asking him, so you called and I'm here, so what do you want? And Dhruva Maharaj told him that actually I wanted a kingdom. And I thought that this was something very nice and very worthwhile. But now that I've realized you, then I see that this kingdom I was hankering for is just of no value. I thought that it was like a great treasure trove of valuable gems. But now I see that that so-called treasure trove was just like a big pile of broken colored glass, just completely useless. Now I have you. So bhakti is like that. So Dhruva Maharaj, his example of Karma Mishra Bhakti. Bhakti performed with some material desire, but by the potency of that bhakti, those material desires, or in fact, ultimately in the terms of this verse, actually the subtle body of Dhruva Maharaj became dissolved. And because of that, the desire went. Not that he just became more self-controlled, but actually the desire went, because the subtle body went. So there's Karma Mishra Bhakti, then there's Yoga Mishra Bhakti. Someone has some interest in devotional service, but they also have some attraction to the mechanical performance of certain bodily and psychological disciplines, mechanical disciplines, which are there in the different processes of yoga, like Ashtanga Yoga, Sankhya Yoga. In Bhagavad Gita, in the 8th chapter, between about around verse 10 to 13 or thereabouts, in the 8th chapter, Krishna talks about the process that's similar to Ashtanga Yoga, process he calls Sat Chakra, if I remember correctly. Or is it Sat Kriya Chakra Yoga? A process of mechanically elevating through the chakras, but mixed with bhakti. that as one is doing these practices, fixing the mind, sitting very peacefully, trying to absorb oneself on the spiritual platform and control the senses, but one is thinking of Krishna, and then one becomes liberated. So this is described by our acharyas as yoga mishra bhakti. Bhakti is there, but mixed with yoga. Srila Baladeva Vijayabhushan, in commenting on those particular verses, he makes the point that it is unlikely that any of us would really follow that process exactly of yoga mishra bhakti, because it's very demanding. You have to do things, for example, like merge your incoming breath into your outgoing breath. Exactly what that entails, I'm not sure really, but it sounds really something quite extraordinary. But this is part of the whole process. And lift your whatever it is from the different, through the different chakras, and come out through the top of the head only at a certain time of the year, only in the northern summer, only when the moon is waxing, and there's so many different factors involved. It's very difficult. So Baladeva Vijayabhushan says that we don't expect to see this form of yoga mishra bhakti, but a form of yoga mishra bhakti that we may experience. Sometimes we may meet some people who are trying to do this, is that one may think that in order to improve my chanting, before I chant every day, I will do 30 minutes of hatha yoga, asanas, pranayams, and all this type of thing, physical exercises, breathing exercises, and in this way pacify my physical system more, and then in that more settled state, then I'll chant very nicely. So he says this is a type of yoga mishra bhakti which we may sometimes encounter. And the person may think, if they actually manage to chant nicely after all that, and they finish their 16 rounds and they're feeling very blissful, having become absorbed in chanting, they may think, just see, it was a very good idea to do that hatha yoga for half an hour. It helped, and I chanted very nicely, actually. But he explains that it is not that hatha which helped. It was actually that you applied yourself seriously to chanting. So in fact, this is like a mistake. It's even Maya tricking you, thinking that these other practices, they are important and they're helping. But really one should simply focus on bhakti, on devotional service. That is what will actually help, in fact. So bhakti is a complete process. You don't have to add other things to make up for any shortcomings in devotional service. If you see any shortcomings are there, that the result is not coming as you might like, or as the scriptures say you could expect the results to come, if you see they're not coming, then don't think that you need to add some special additive to sort of enliven things, bring things to a higher point. No. You just have to adjust the way that you are performing your bhakti. Otherwise, bhakti, in and of itself, bhakti, pure devotional service, will completely purify the heart, dissolve the subtle body, all your problems will go, and you'll be very blissful on the spiritual platform. Baladeva Vijayabhushan also makes the point that he says that bhakti, or rather ananya bhakti, pure devotional service, undeviating devotional service, is so powerful He says it's just like the waters of the Ganges, and you don't need anything else. In fact, every year, it's very sad actually, but every year, without fail, at our Mayapur festival, at least one devotee drowns. At least one devotee, every single year without fail. And this year, when I was there, the night before I left, one devotee drowned and swept away, and body never seen again, and that was that. So the Ganges is like that. You cannot think that, yes, I will stand against the Ganges. It's very powerful, sweeping down. Nothing can stand against it. So pure devotional service is like that. Nothing can stand against it, provided we very seriously take to it and take shelter of it. If we think that we can add something else to empower it further, that's our mistake, actually. In fact, in the end, we'll simply be interfering with the potency of pure devotional service itself. So, for a devotee, in Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami explains that for a devotee, there are two main obstacles, bhukti and mukti. Bhukti means the attraction to material life, material sense gratification, and mukti means the attraction to liberation. He describes these as being two, he says, pishachas. Pishacha means witch. Two witches. Very dangerous. With great mystical power to bewilder a person and bring the person under her control. Bhukti and mukti. These are great witches. So we find in Nectar of Devotion that Srila Prabhupada has dedicated two chapters to discussing bhukti and mukti and the dangers of these. And interestingly enough, Srila Rupa Goswami says that of these two witches, mystically empowered witches, the most dangerous, the more dangerous and the more powerful is mukti. Even more powerful than the witch of attraction to sense gratification. We might find that a little puzzling. We are probably not so much troubled by the desire to merge into the Brahmajyoti, I wouldn't expect. But the desire to enjoy material life or attempt to enjoy material life, that may be nagging at us quite regularly. But actually, Rupa Goswami explains that the desire for mukti is more dangerous in the long run. We understand that the desire for sense gratification, generally, it only influences the devotee up to the level of nishtha. When the devotee is going through the earlier stages, bhajana kriya, beginning devotional service seriously, then anatha nivritti, the stage of actually trying to deal with one's, particularly one's material desires, then gradually, if one is serious and if one is persistent, gradually those material desires will go, as stated here, the subtle body will dissolve. And by the time one comes to the level of nishtha, the level of steadiness, then material desire to a greater extent will be gone. So Rupa Goswami makes this point that desire for sense gratification really only is there up to the level of nishtha, or to the end of anatta nivritti. Even at the end of anatta nivritti, it's basically gone. But the desire for liberation, that may continue on. Actually, it may continue on, particularly because it is actually spiritual. Spiritual. A form of spiritual liberation. So it persists on trying to influence the mind of the devotee beyond even the level of nishtha, and generally material desire is not so much there at that point. So this witch of mukti is considered to be more dangerous liberation. But for the devotee who really applies himself very seriously to the process of devotional service, he is able to defeat that witch. Both the witches, and particularly the witch of mukti. So in the end, they cannot affect him at all. They cannot affect him at all. Srila Prabhupada made the point that when a person becomes a pure devotee, Maya Devi personally comes and offers her obeisances and then goes away and leaves the devotee. Rupa Goswami explains, though, that the devotee, a pure devotee, who's become so advanced and left bhakti and mukti far behind, that very advanced pure devotee becomes very attractive because of his or her purity of heart. They become very attractive. So bhakti and mukti come again, but not in an attempt to attack the devotee. They come and plead with the devotee that you're such a nice devotee. Can we stay with you and associate with you to get your association? And of course the devotee is thinking, no, who needs bhakti or mukti? But actually the fact is that the devotee on that advanced level, he doesn't really care. He's detached. He's not feeling some antagonistic feelings towards Bhakti Devi or Mukti Devi. So he lets them stay. And they stay as maidservants. No longer can they affect. But they stay as maidservants. So therefore, such an elevated pure devotee, we always or often see, at least, depends, but particularly, definitely, the pure devotee is always in a very liberated condition. And that can always be seen very clearly. Because Mukti Devi is serving. And oftentimes, we saw particularly in the case of Srila Prabhupada, Bhakti Devi is also serving, giving so many things. But there's no question of the pure devotee becoming bewildered at all. But rather, he is engaging these things and engaging these persons in his service. So in this way, pure devotee, simply through engaging in devotional service, gains everything and more, everything desirable. At the end of the 8th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna makes this point. Having explained at the end of the 8th chapter how a person who is more materialistic has to practice yoga in a certain way and be careful to leave his body in a certain way in order to avoid taking birth again. There's so many factors described there towards the end of the 8th chapter, as we mentioned. Must be in the northern summer, not the southern summer. Must be during the period of the waxing moon, when the moon's increasing. And at different times. There's a whole list of them given. And then the devotee, or the person rather, may actually become liberated. So there are different factors, which include factors of karma and dhyana and yoga, in how the devotee positions himself for the time of death. So in the very last verse in that chapter, Lord Krishna explains that my devotees do not have to worry about those things. But simply by engaging in devotional service, they will not be bereft of anything that could be achieved through karma, through yoga in the sense of mystic yoga, mystic powers, jnana in the sense of knowledge and understanding, that my devotee, Krishna says, will achieve all of these and more, and at the end achieve the eternal destination simply by devotional service. My devotee will gain all these. So this is because devotional service is so powerful. Devotional service is so attractive that all these deities controlling all these different things, they all become attractive to the devotee. And they don't intimidate the devotee. They simply come as humble maidservants. So the devotee is able to utilize them and their opulences of material things, mystic powers, or knowledge, understanding. He's able to utilize all these things as he wants in the devotional service of the Lord. So, in this way, we should understand. Devotional service is a completely self-sufficient process. There's absolutely no need to adjust the considerations of devotional service. The only need, and there is a real need, to adjust ourselves in terms of devotional service. If we adjust ourselves so we fit into the process nicely of devotional service, the process will act just like the Ganges, just sweeping everything away, gone, finished, like this. So this point is being made, Prabhupada points out again that Lord Kapila, he's stressing this point. Bhakti, in one of the previous verses, he said, Bhakti Siddhya Gariyasi. That bhakti is better than any other type of perfection, whatever it may be. It's better, and it includes all that. So, all the devotee has to do is aspire for pure bhakti. Even, actually, it's explained, and the point is made in that 8th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, that the other systems of yoga, any other process, karma also, any other process, if you want to become successful in it, bhakti has to be there. Bhakti has to be there. Otherwise the other processes in and of themselves have not got the potency to deliver what they promise to deliver. That point comes out in that 8th chapter, in that description of that Sat Chakra Yoga, whatever it's called, sort of in the middle of the 8th chapter, that the person is mechanically performing their yoga practice, but they're also fixing their minds on Krishna, and then they become liberated. So our acharyas make the point in commenting on that chapter that that yogi would not have become liberated simply by performing the mechanical practices. It was only because bhakti was included. This is the nature of bhakti. In and of itself, it is independent and supreme, and even other processes are dependent upon it. Hare Krishna. Any comments or questions? Srila Prabhupada Kita.